With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
BangTheBook.com.
Hello, what's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, October 27th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here. Generally on Tuesdays, we have our Tuesday meeting show where we get Brad Powers and Brian Leonard. But this week, we're going to have a Thursday meeting with a couple of WagerTalk.com handicappers, Brian Leonard, and then also we'll go hunting for winners with Sports Cheetah, get him back on the show here this week. So very excited about today's show. Lots of things to cover. We're going to chat a little bit of NBA, mostly college football, and the NFL with our two handicappers today. Don't forget, on Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment, myself and Cole Ryan, then also the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Bang the Book Radio listeners that are interested can head on over to DSI Sportsbook, use the promo code BTB Radio, get a free $10 bet just for signing up, and an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. So with that, we'll go ahead and get into today's first guest. That is Mr. Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing great. I was a little bit better when the Indians were up 1-0, but everything's going great.
Yeah, certainly, and happy to have you joining us here on this Thursday show. Couldn't make it on Tuesday. I hope your pearly whites are doing well over there, but we will get Brian back on Tuesdays for next week, so just a slight change here for this week. But a lot of things to talk about here during this segment, and I want to start with a little bit of NBA stuff. The NBA season, a couple days old now. Really, you know, I think at this stage of the game, it's just about trying to set the listeners up for success in terms of having the right framework, having the right foundation to handicap the NBA early in the season. What kinds of suggestions would you have for them?
Well, I started in this industry doing the NBA. I was friends with Phil Steele of North Coast Sports, and we've all seen him on ESPN. And he was doing football, and I used to bet basketball, and I did very well, and that's how I got started in this. And basically, what I did was I would read every newspaper every single day until I got the point where I knew when a player would make a quote, I knew what that meant. For example, one time Charles Barkley said, we need to get out and make some easy baskets. Well, that told me that they were going to run. They were going to get the rebounds and throw the ball down the court. And so I went out and I hit all the sports books in Vegas betting the over of that game. And after I was done with my bet, one of the things I like to do is I told the sportsbook manager, I said, listen, I says, this is the quote that came out today. You're probably going to get a lot of action on the over, just letting you know. That way, if I ever need a favor from him, I could get it. But that's one of the things that I've done for years is reading all the newspapers. The problem right now with football going on is I don't have that much time because football, I'm having such a good season. I don't have the time. It's just simply impossible. But that's what I do. And, you know, a lot of people use power ratings. I have found for basketball, it's almost a complete waste to do power ratings because there's so many times guys are in and out of the lineup. And when you, it's a little bit different than ball. You know, obviously the quarterback is so important in football. In basketball, there's so many injuries as the season goes on. And as we've seen from San Antonio, they like to rest some starters. It's really, to me, it's more of a waste to do the power ratings unless you make notes saying, okay, this guy was out, this guy only played a limited amount of minutes. It's a lot tougher to go off of power ratings in the NBA.
So do you tend to gravitate more towards situational capping, looking for those back-to-backs, 3 and 4, you know, letdown, sandwich spots, look-aheads, all that type of thing? Or is it, you know, you just try to get a pulse for the team each individual day and then go according to that?
Yeah, a little of both. Obviously, the situational takes precedence. But there's also, and it works well early in the season, because you see a lot of playoff rematches. For example, Cleveland, the next time they play, they go to Toronto and they play the Raptors. Well, Cleveland knocked the Raptors out of the playoffs. So that game means more to the Raptors. That's a game the Raptors have circled. whereas Cleveland probably has not paid it more attention than any other game. So if you go back and you look at how these teams that have been knocked out of the playoffs by this opposing team, they do very well. So that's one of the things I look for early in the season. We saw it with Golden State in that first game. They have some new players coming into the lineup. Obviously, one of the greatest players in the NBA, it's going to take them a while. We go back when we saw the Cavs, when they put everything together, it took them a while to get going. So the teams you see at the beginning of the season, if you've power rated them for the entire season, a lot of times you're not going to see the same team as the year goes on. You're going to have ups and downs. A team like Portland. Portland, I believe, has just about everybody back from last year. So it would not surprise me at all if Portland gets off to a strong start for the season because they don't have to blend in any new players. So that's the kind of thing that I look for when I'm handicapping early season NBA.
What about coaching changes? Is that something that you pay a lot of attention to? Is that something you pay more attention to from, say, a total standpoint, looking at pace statistics and things like that?
I think it does mean more for the pace. For example, last night, Ralph Michaels is an excellent basketball handicapper, and he texted me and he said he really liked the Sacramento game under. And of course, if there's somebody that I trust, I'm going to bet that play. And he talked about the coach wanting to slow everything down, and they averaged about 102 points giving up during the preseason. He was mad about that. He said, that's too many points. We need to slow it down. And then obviously last night, that game went easily under the total. It went off at 211.5. And it goes to 207. I think I bet it at 212.5, something to that range. But anytime you can get something like that where you're ahead of the markets in pace, it's definitely going to help you.
So when do you dive in quite a bit for your clients with the NBA? Is it something that you're kind of doing a little bit here and there when you find some big edges and then you sort of go more into it after the college football and the NFL seasons are done?
Yeah, the NFL, I don't have a problem with the NFL. Everybody knows everything about the NFL. But once the college regular season ends, we probably got another 3 weeks or something till we're at the point where the games start to diminish. Right now, all I'm looking for is spot plays, the things that I've talked about. In the meantime, I'm starting to read the papers, get a feel on the teams. And then once I get to that point where we're down to like basically the bowl games in the NFL, then I'm full-time into the NBA, and I'll be reading the newspapers each and every day. It's just right now the college football and the NFL seasons have gone so well for me, and I've got so many clients for that. I would be doing them a disservice if I gave up on that and started working on basketball. And as we know, more people are interested in football than basketball. So it's something that I've changed over the years. Like I said, I started with just the NBA and had a lot of success. But more of the money is made for football. It's easier to get bigger bets down in football than it is a college basketball game. So that's what I concentrate on right now.
One last thing I want to ask you about with the NBA side. You talk about reading the papers. You talk about, finding those edges that were a little bit more difficult to find when you started out because information wasn't at everybody's fingertips the way it is now. Have you found that you've had to adapt, or are you just looking in different places to find that information?
Well, when I started, there was a magazine store in North Olmsted, I used to go to, and I would buy every out-of-town newspaper that had an NBA team. Now, most of the time, they would only carry the Sunday editions, but I would be leaving there. It would cost me like $70 every week just to go in and read that. Now, obviously, we don't have that situation anymore with everything being on the Internet. So, I found that that's the way to do it, and especially when you interview the players. The coaches are always going to say the right things, but the players let their emotions get in the way. And sometimes they'll come out there and they'll say, we're really disappointed. We just didn't play with any heart last game. And that's the kind of thing you want. If you get a bad situation and you've got a good team, for example, I'm starting to date myself, but when Stockton and Malone played for Utah, that was, to me, it was sort of like the San Antonio Spurs of now. When you've got a quality organization, quality people running that organization and the players. Stockton and Malone are two of the top guys that you would want on your team because they would do whatever the coaches wanted. And if they started talking about, we just did not have it last night, I'm very disappointed. You knew Utah was going to give a supreme effort that next time out. And I was on Utah a lot in those situations.
Well, we'll move from the hardwood to the gridiron here, talk a little bit of college football and NFL with Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. And I think that this is a really, really good discussion to have here today, and I'm glad that you suggested talking about this topic with me. And that's strength of schedule, because you can get some really misleading results, both in college football and the NFL, if you're just looking at us from a standings perspective. And you know, what is it that you use for strength of schedule? Do you have your own metrics? Do you take them from somewhere? And then how do you apply them?
Well, there's a couple that other people do, but I also take my power ratings. For example, this week I went with all my current power ratings and I went down the schedule for each team and I figured out what their average power rating that they played against, so their opponent power rating. And it's just, you know, a lot of times when you're playing different conferences, obviously Texas A&M this week is going to have a lot tougher strength of schedule than New Mexico State. But I was just amazed at some of the conference teams. For example, Minnesota and Illinois, you look at that game and there's a rogue line out there of 9 right now with Minnesota because of the Illinois quarterback and everything. But Illinois has played a 10-point tougher schedule thus far than Minnesota. So while your numbers say a certain thing, and my raw number was Minnesota 3 in this game, which would give me a play on Illinois here, but Illinois played a 10-point tougher schedule. So when I go back at the games, and I'll say, you know, for example, a 10-point schedule may be Kent State going up against a Maryland or something. And I'll say, well, this team has played Maryland's all year. This team has played Kent State's all year. Obviously, the numbers when they go up against the tougher schedule, the Maryland tougher schedule, are going to show me a lot more than just a strict yards per against, that kind of thing. And we see a lot of them this week. And, you know, one of them is the game in Jacksonville, Georgia and Florida. And we did a video at Wager Talk with Marco D'Angelo and Cheetah yesterday, and we talked about that. And, you know, my raw number is Florida plus 3.5. The line's basically 7.5. But when you take a look at strength of schedule, Georgia's actually played an 11-point strength of schedule that's stronger than Florida. Florida has played basically nobody on the season. So you look at that game and you see a Georgia team that just has not looked good. But go back and look, that game against Vanderbilt, and I was very lucky. I had Vanderbilt on the money line in that game. But that was one of the strangest box scores you've ever seen. Georgia dominated yards per play. They dominated yards in the game. Normally you'll see that if a team turns the ball over. There wasn't turnovers in that game. It was nothing like it. So one of the strangest games that I have encountered doing this over the years was that box score. So most people are going to look at that and they'll see, well, Vanderbilt beat Georgia outright. They must be, you know, a lousy team. Well, Georgia hasn't done a lot this year, but now you've got them coming off the bye with the head coach with more time to put in his system. Anytime you've got coaches that come in, they're not going to be able to put in their entire system in the preseason. Now they've got that extra week to be able to put some more wrinkles in there. And Florida's coming in. They go, these guys couldn't even beat Vanderbilt. So you take a look at the strength of schedule, 11 points tougher schedule for Georgia. I really think this Georgia team is live this week at plus 7.5.
So when you do something like that, is it something where you make an adjustment to your line, or is it just kind of, you know, circumstantial evidence that you consider, you know, that makes you sort of either stay off a game if you have a big overlay, or something that makes you get on a game if maybe your number is a little bit closer to the Vegas line than you like to play?
Okay, well, let's take a look at the Nebraska-Wisconsin game. My raw number was 6 on this game. I believe the current line's about 8. Now, it is a low-scoring game. The total's very low. So first off, the thing you want to look at anytime a low-scoring game would be at the underdog. But even though my number is a 6, Wisconsin's played an 11-point tougher schedule than Nebraska's had. Nebraska's been against a lot of weaker teams, which is why they're undefeated at the time. But it's an 11-point better schedule for Wisconsin. And I take a look. I do a lot with explosive yardage. For example, anytime a team gets a play of 20 yards or more, that's an explosive play. So I go back and I chart how many explosive plays for and against for each team per game. So I've got Nebraska sitting there at 1.4, a positive 1.4 per game, Wisconsin a positive 1.3. So normally if I had that 6 and the number was 8, I'd be leaning with Nebraska. But then I look and see that Wisconsin's played the 11-point tougher schedule. Now I'm not on Nebraska, and I'm leaning towards Wisconsin. Like I said, I probably won't be there because I hate to lay points in a low-scoring game. Because overall, if you're laying points in this range in a line of 42 or less in college football, you're doing yourself a disservice laying those kind of points. So I'll probably lay off the game, but it saved me a play on Nebraska by doing that extra step and looking at the strength of schedule thus far.
That's really interesting. I think it's a really good idea for our listeners to try and incorporate. And in terms of that, with the line move here on this game where Wisconsin pushed through 7, actually sitting as high as 9.5 now at some places, doesn't look like it's going to get to 10, but you know, who knows with some of the action that'll come in on game day. But have you found that, you know, that sometimes when you have those big strength of schedule disparities, that kind of drives a line move in the market?
It does sometimes. And I've been playing, anytime I've got a situation where I've got the explosive plays on the team that's the underdog, I put a little bit of money on it. And it even makes it even better when I take a look at the explosive plays along with the strength of schedule. For example, the Georgia game we talked about. Georgia on the season is down 1.3 explosive plays per game. Florida's up 1.2. So that's a 2.5 advantage. And normally that would be something I'd be looking to play on Florida. But like I said, when I incorporate the 11-point differential, it makes a lot of sense and makes Georgia more equal to Florida in that matchup. But, you know, there's certain other ones. You know, we'll take a look at let's take a look at SMU and Tulane this week. I know a lot of people are looking to – just can't wait to bet against SMU off of that upset of Houston. I'm not so sure. Now, I'll have to do a little bit more reading on how the players are approaching this game. But my raw number in this game was SMU 1.5. My explosive play is SMU is up 0.2, where Tulane is down 0.3. So you get about a 0.5 advantage for SMU. But SMU has also played a 7-point tougher schedule. So not only do I have the wrong team, to me, the wrong team is favored here. I had the advantage in the explosive plays, and they played a 7-point tougher schedule. Now, obviously, the situation is calling for Tulane because of SMU off that big win. But I think this SMU team's a little bit underrated right now, and I'll be betting on SMU, and part of that is because they have played the tougher schedule.
What about with a team like Tulane, though? I mean, you talk about looking at explosive plays. They are an option offense, and it is the first year that they're doing it. So do you put some controls in, or is that just something that you kind of keep in the back of your mind?
That's something that you have to understand how they're doing this, the Georgia Techs, the Navies, those kind of teams. For example, Georgia Tech is up 0.8, where Duke is down 2.5 on explosive plays. So it's somewhat surprising to me when I see a team that does the option that has the more explosive plays. For example, Georgia Southern is a team very similar. In the past, they were really good at explosive plays. They had terrific running backs that could just break through the line and hit the big game. This year, they don't have that, and that's part of the reason why they have underperformed this season. There's another game I want to take a look at here, describing this a little bit. Baylor and Texas. My raw power rating in this game was Baylor 6.5. But when you take a look at strength of schedule, Texas is 11 points higher than Baylor is in this game. So Baylor had a big 4.6 advantage in explosive plays, but they played an extremely easy schedule. I believe this is only their second road game, and they're playing an actual team here. So this is a situation where my initial numbers would say Baylor's the side. When you look at the schedule they played, obviously Texas has played a much tougher schedule, so you could throw out all the other information, which is why the line is roughly where it is, 2.5, 3. For Baylor, even though my raw number was 6.5.
One other topic of discussion I want to have here, and of course this is something we can elaborate on a little bit here as we get you back on the Tuesday show next week, but you know, you are an expert in the Mid-American Conference, and for the MAC, we've got a couple of Thursday night games here this week, Akron, Buffalo, Ohio, Toledo, but next week starts MACtion, where we get the Tuesday and Wednesday night games, which you know, everybody fell in love with a few years ago with Northern Illinois and Toledo putting up 129 points in that game. But in terms of that, I mean, it's really unique. Now, some of the players in the MAC are used to it because they do this a couple times a year, but it's a really unique situation in that we get these standalone college football games on Tuesday and Wednesday nights. So we get a much larger public betting handle than we're used to seeing. So how do you alter your approach when you've got, you know, something that unique?
Yeah, you definitely have to alter it, especially to me, the home, for example, Thursday, there's two home teams here in the MAC going tonight. The home teams have an advantage in these shortened week games. We've seen it in the NFL. The Thursday NFL games are the ugliest NFL games you'll ever see. There's a lot of them that have gone under the total, especially in the first half, because it's just so hard. The teams just don't have time to prepare. So the defenses have that edge in those kind of games. And we see that also in the MAC. Now, when they come up with the play on the Tuesday and Wednesday, most of the time I believe they had that week off before. So I don't know if that has the same effect. But it's a good point about teams that the public wants to play. Your general handicapper, general bettor, wants to sit there and watch the game and have action on that game. That's one of the reasons why they have the recreational handicappers as opposed to the people who do this for a living. I don't even have a chance to watch most of these games. I don't care if it's on TV. I just want to get an edge in the game. And when people see a team, for example, let's just look at tonight's games. Take a look at Toledo. Toledo, when they've been on national TV, they played pretty well. They played pretty good ball. Buffalo, for example, has played terrible. Buffalo did beat Army earlier this season, but Army has fallen off the map a little bit. But a lot of people have that in their head. They don't see a lot of these teams. So they are able to look at the game and say, well, I saw that team play once, and I really like what they do. We saw the same thing with Western Michigan when they played Eastern Michigan. Western Michigan is undefeated. They're getting a lot of talk. They're, you know, nationally ranked, that kind of thing. And we see people that know that. So obviously they're going to be looking to play Western Michigan. And the line was a little bit inflated, and people who backed Eastern Michigan were able to cash that. But you see that all the time. Your teams that score a lot of points and your teams that people rarely see are the teams that people want to bet.
Well, and we'll certainly have one of those next Tuesday night because Western Michigan takes on Ball State in a line that I'm sure will be a little bit inflated there. But overall, general impressions here of the MAC. I mean, you know, it's obviously the MAC West and then the MAC East. And the MAC East this year, Akron having a pretty decent season there. And, you know, they control their destiny here at this point. Ohio, they're going to take on Toledo tonight, 17-point dog. They'll probably end up losing that game. So, you know, Akron should be in the driver's seat here if they're able to take care of business tonight. But is there a team the rest of the season in the MAC that you think, you know, bettors can make a little bit of money off of?
Well, we had some discussions at our Tuesday meeting earlier this season about Northern Illinois. And they started the season, really struggled. They'd lost their starting quarterback before the season started. That was a huge blow for them. And they looked terrible in the first few weeks. But then when they played Western Michigan, I think I might have been the only professional bettor who was on Northern Illinois in that game because I know these teams so well, and they'd beaten Western, I believe, 8 straight years. And I said, keep in mind, this is now conference action. You've got 3 different situations. At the beginning of the season, you've got your preseason games and your games out of conference. Then you get into conference action, and then you've got your bowl games at the end of the year. Northern Illinois, as I mentioned, was terrible early on. Western Michigan was great. Everybody's betting Western Michigan. The line's just going crazy. And I took Northern Illinois, and I was fortunate enough they held on and got that cover for me. Well, now they're starting to come on. Now that they're in league action, they blew out Buffalo last week. It's a team right now that they're not up to prior year standards, but they're much better than what a lot of people have in their power ratings because – they've been able to play these teams. The coaching staff knows these teams. They know the weaknesses. It's a lot different than what you saw early on. So, you know, I hate to make a judgment on where we can make money as the season goes on because you don't know where the lines are going to be, but I'll be keeping my eyes on Northern Illinois.
Well, move over to the NFL side here for a couple of minutes, and I want to have the same discussion that we just had about college football with regards to the NFL, and that's about strength of schedule because – I feel like even though we are here in week 8, there are a couple of teams that we may not know a whole lot about. One of them that really stands out to me is the Dallas Cowboys, who have not played a very strong schedule, had that nice win at Lambeau Field that everyone's going to remember here this week. But are there some other teams in the NFL that have kind of lagged in that SOS department?
I don't do as much for the NFL because everybody in your division is what I'm concerned with. Everybody in the division basically plays the same schedule. Every year you get different divisions that you have to play. And since most of your games that team is playing is in division, I don't pay as much attention to it. But there is something that I always look at, and that's when I try to put myself in the position of the players as to how much this game means. And you take a look at teams that, first off, when you're doing the NFL, your most important games are your divisional games. Anytime you play the divisional games, you know the teams are up for those games. Not only is it important to win in your division, but these are big rivalries in your division. You play these teams twice a year. You know these teams. It's a different type of ball game than it is when you're playing your conference games, non-divisional conference games, which take number two, and your non-conference games, which take number three in importance. So if you see a team that they've got a divisional game, they're playing at home, let's say they lose that game. The next game, they're traveling out of conference, they're playing a team, let's say an AFC team playing an NFC team, and they never play that team, they don't prep for them, they don't know them as well, and then the following week, they're back at home playing a divisional game. I know going in that the least important game is that second game, especially after they've lost that first game. They know they need to get that third game against the divisional opponent. So even though your power ratings will say one thing, I know is by following this for years, I know what's important. And if it's a game, for example, let's say Cincinnati. Let's say it's a mid-level team. They just played Baltimore, lost at home. Now they travel to Atlanta or something. And then the next week they're back at home, they're playing Pittsburgh. The game in Atlanta has, even though each game counts as one, it has less importance on the schedule because, number one, it's not a divisional game. Number two, it's not a conference game. And then number three, it's a team you don't play very often, you don't know that much about. Less importance there. So then you have to look at it from the other side and check the schedule for that, for example, in this case, Atlanta, their situation. And you could find good advantages there and handicap in the NFL just knowing what games are more important than others.
Another hot-button topic here at this time of the year in the NFL is injury reports are just loaded. I mean, there are a lot of guys that are limited in practice, a lot of guys that are missing practice. Veteran players may get a day off from practice, but there's some gamesmanship that goes into that where they get added to the injury report. Maybe they're not that banged up, but it's just something extra for the opponent to think about. At this time of the year, with so many injuries, with so many guys limited, questionable, doubtful, whatever the case may be, do you find yourself speculating a little bit more on injuries early in the week to try and get some line value? Or is it one of those things where you're, you know, pumping the brakes, waiting till Wednesday or Thursday for the picture to clear up a little bit more?
Yeah, it's a tough call because in the NFL, other than quarterbacks, really nobody is strong enough to move the line unless it's a group. For example, the team has got a lot of injuries, a wide receiver or linebacker or something like that, where it's a community of the same position that they're having some problems in. Then I pay more attention to it. The line, basically, there's people that will get the information before I am. There's so many fantasy websites out there for the NFL. You could usually tell when the line moves if that key player that you think is, you know, AC Green of Cincinnati or something, if he's going to play, you can usually see a little tick in the lines as the week goes on. So watching the line screen does a little bit of work for me that I don't have to do, because that will tell me before I can even get that information. There's other people that will know it. The beat writers and everything will tweet something out. So I don't pay that much attention to it unless it's later in the week. And as I say, it's a positional situation where you've got more than one player that's going to be out that game.
We would think that through week 8 here, the NFL market getting a little bit tighter, the odds makers know these teams better, lines should be more efficient. So what does that mean for you? Do you sort of limit your exposure a little bit? Do you lower your requirements for what you feel like you can play? How do you handle that situation?
Well, when the lines come out on Sunday night, I have a number in my head. I don't use power ratings for the NFL just because I can look at the schedule and see exactly what the line should be, you know, guessing the lines or whatever. So I don't really use the power ratings in that regard. But when a line comes out, for example, before the game last week between Arizona the San Diego Denver game before Monday Night Football. Denver was sitting there at six and a half around town, the places that had it. Now, At that point, I thought San Diego plus 6.5 was a pretty good bargain. I didn't play it because I had other stuff going on, but I thought that that line was a little bit high based on the way these teams are playing. Denver coming off a short week. Now we get the injury to the Denver running back. The line dropped down a little bit, but as I see this morning, I was seeing 4.5s and fives yesterday. Now I'm seeing fives, 5.5s. So money's coming in on Denver here, and if it gets back to that 6.5, especially now that Denver's got the running back out, I'll be playing on San Diego. So I have sort of like strike points where I'm looking to play a certain team at a certain number. Last week I thought Tennessee was going to take some money against Indy, and they did. So I played Tennessee early because I thought that's what's going to happen. Game went to 4, got a great line, got a loser. Still happens. You're going to be on the right side of the line and still lose. It happens. But that's the kind of thing that I look at when I'm looking for that kind of thing as the week goes on.
A lot of excellent insight here across all the sports that we discuss with Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Brian, what's going on over there at WagerTalk in preparation for this weekend?
Actually, we did videos yesterday at WagerTalk. Ralph Michaels, Cheetah, Marco D'Angelo, and myself. There's a game I love this week, and I'm not, you've known me, I'm pretty soft-spoken when it comes to any of this stuff, but I am having my college football game of the year over at Wager Talk. I've just posted over there. We get one game of the year per season, a 6% play. It's not like everybody else that has their Sunday following the Saturday game of the year and all that other stuff. It's the one game of the year, and I put that over there at Wager Talk, and I've loaded that up. And I love that game. Everything is exactly what I look for, and the line's very cheap. So I expect another big week here in college football, and I'm stepping out with for me, is a huge play.
Well, that's at B Leonard Sports on Twitter. Brian, appreciate your time, man. A lot of great insight today. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again on Tuesday next week.
Sounds great, and go Tribe.
Oh, excellent segment there with Brian Leonard. A lot of good stuff. I think our listeners can definitely take a lot of good insight there from that, and also, you know, some of those different statistics, different things to look at, particularly with regards to college football. Speaking of college football, we'll stick with that train. Bring in Sports Cheetah for our Hunting for Winners segment from WagerTalk.com. Mr. Cheetah, how are you today, sir?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Doing very well. Appreciate you coming back on the air here. I know you had a little bit of a prior commitment last week, so good to have you back here this week. In terms of the college football market as a whole here, I know it's been a couple of weeks since we talked, so are you finding that the market's gotten a little bit tighter?
Yeah, it generally does around mid-season. My volume will typically go down as well. But there's always, I mean, it's baffling. No matter what, every Sunday there's always some openers that are just clearly off. You know, example would be, let's say, like Oregon State was plus 17 at, you know, on Sunday. And, you know, that's down to 12 or 13. So you'll still find some games like that. Tulane open dogs, they were like plus three on open Sunday. Now they're laying 3. So you just have to be on top of it either way. But yeah, you'll generally, you know, find less games like that as the year goes on.
Well, and for those opening lines, I mean, is it an overreaction to what we've most recently seen, or is it just sometimes they put out a bad number?
I think it's both. The Tulane one could have been an overreaction because they're playing SMU at home, and SMU just beat Houston, which is maybe their biggest win they've ever had. So for in that sense, I think that was maybe an overreaction to the SMU win, which got corrected pretty quickly. The Oregon State one, they've just kind of been disrespected continually in the market. I've backed them a couple times now. I had them last week against Washington, and they're getting over 5 touchdowns. And this is another one, you know, against Washington State, it was 17, and I thought it should be under 14. And so I think the Oregon State one is more just kind of a bad number where I just don't think that the odds makers have caught up to where it should be. Now, in this case, it's down to where it should be now, you know, under the 14. But initially, yeah, I think that was just a bad number.
So I know we talked a couple of weeks ago about how you like to tweak your power ratings and review your lines based on what the closing number winds up being in the college football market. And we just talked about the lines have gotten tighter. Odds makers have a better idea of these teams. They also have a better idea of where the market's going to come in for some of these teams, and they can start shading lines accordingly. So if you get a close that's way off of a number that you have here at this point in the season, you know, do you wind up adjusting a little bit quicker, or do you kind of chalk that up to a little bit of variance?
No, I definitely will still take it into account and then usually make an adjustment. And a good example is that Washington-Oregon State game last week. I took plus 35.5 after it moved up from 31 at open, which is where my number was right around, I think it was 31.5. And so I took the 35.5, not only because I thought the number gave us an edge, but I also liked the X's and O's of the matchup in general. Oregon State actually has like the sixth best pass defense in the country. Another reason why I like them at 17 against Washington State. Washington State, all they do is throw the ball. Oregon State's going to hang in that game too. And it just made too much sense not to take over 5 touchdowns when you have a defense that's as strong as Oregon State's. And I think part of the reason the line was high is they were down to their third string quarterback. But he's not really a drop off from their second string or first string. Ultimately, they're just kind of 3 guys that were all battling it out before the season anyways. And, you know, he did an okay job. And so what I'm getting at here is I took the 35.5 and I was surprised it didn't come down. Like I said, my number was 31.5. It got up as high as like 37 even. I think that's around where it closed. And so even though I covered easily in Washington, never ever was covering 35.5. And I was right, you know, a 6-point difference in the market there from my number to close was worthwhile enough for me to kind of bump Washington up in my power ratings a little bit, just because even though it was just a 1-game sample and, you know, Oregon State, I thought the matchup made sense. I was able to learn that, you know, I'm probably not as high on Washington as I need to be in general. And then sure enough, I bump them up a couple points and, you know, you can get 9.5, 10 now against Utah, which I think is a little short now. So we'll see. I'm intrigued to see where that number goes. And that's kind of like what you're saying. You're always adjusting week to week and you have to be on top of it because it does change, you know, every few days. You have to, you know, to see what's new and where numbers are landing and then, you know, figure out for yourself where you need to put yours.
Well, we've seen some pretty big movers here in the college football market, Louisville being one of them. They've gone up to a 33-point favorite at some shops against Virginia. Ohio State pretty much getting one-sided love as they're up to 27 against Northwestern. Is that a case where you agree with both of those line moves, or do you feel like, you know, based on maybe some recent results or some of those handicapping concepts, if you want to call them fallacies, if that's the way that they are, where a team like Ohio State, for example, you know, back-to-back bad showings on the road, probably shouldn't have beaten Wisconsin, but did. Should have beaten Penn State, but didn't. You know, now this week they take on Northwestern, and all of a sudden, you know, people are expecting a bounce back from the Buckeyes. Is that something that you subscribe to, or do you feel like that's, you know, kind of an overplayed or perhaps false narrative?
Yeah, it's probably overplayed in general. Maybe it's worth a point or something. I don't think it's worth 7 or whatnot. And I know this number is definitely too high now. So if you're playing Ohio State at minus 27, you're paying quite the premium. I think this number should be closer to 21. Maybe it's even 20.5 is my exact number. And Northwestern's not a team that, you know, is bad or something. I'm actually shocked to see this move as much as it has. Same with Louisville. That's kind of gotten to a point where I'm going to be looking maybe at Virginia. But in these cases, it's like, so much one-sided action, I'm just going to, you know, be patient. I mean, maybe I'll get a 34 on Virginia or a 35, a 28 on Northwestern. So I'm going to be patient in those two cases. Another one, Michigan, because of the revenge on the block punt at the buzzer last year, and Michigan State's been so bad, that's all the way up to like 24.5, which shocks me. That's like 7 points high. And that's another one I'm just kind of going to wait and be patient with. But, you know, getting D'Antoni on a Sparty team in a rivalry game at home, getting over 3.5 touchdowns, that blows my mind. And I know Michigan's really good, and I know, you know, they're going to have revenge, and Harbaugh's going to really lay it on them. And it's like, yes, they're going to try their best and try to, you know, just absolutely destroy Michigan State, but it doesn't mean they will. Same with Ohio State. They're going to try to blow out Northwestern off the loss. Doesn't mean they will. So yeah, I think in general those things are overblown, and you only know that whether you're able to, you know, have good insight as to where a number should be and where it currently is. And so in those two cases, and whatnot. I think those are good examples of now the number is too high.
I want to look at a few other line movers here with you in the market and sort of gauge your thoughts on them. One of them, an early kick in Stillwater between West Virginia and Oklahoma State. And, you know, when you talk about a line move like Louisville and Virginia, where it goes from, what, 25, 26, 27, wherever it was, up into the 30s, while it's significant in terms of how big the spread has grown, it certainly doesn't mean as much as something like West Virginia, where it was a number that was around 1 or 2, pushed through 3. It's sitting 3.5, some places showing 4 now. That's a lot more significant of a move, but is that one that you've agreed with here this week?
I can see it. My actual numbers, just my raw numbers, was 2.5. And so when it opened around 1 or 2, I think, is actually where it was most places by the time they opened. I thought that was really good. And moving it just through a 3, I'm not surprised. West Virginia is a really, really good football team. They probably have, if it's not Kansas State, it's West Virginia as far as the best defense in the conference. And that goes a long way in a conference like that, where nobody plays defense, seemingly. You saw Texas Tech. Oklahoma, who's the best team in the conference, couldn't stop Texas Tech. They gave up 56, or it might have even been 59. But either way, they couldn't get a stop the entire second half. Texas Tech scored a touchdown every single series. It was nuts watching that game. West Virginia, on the other hand, I think that was they had held Texas Tech to 7 points in the middle of the fourth quarter when they just played 2 weeks ago. And then Texas Tech, I think, scored 10 more. And it landed 17. I mean, they just are so much stronger on that side of the ball. I think they might end up being the best team in the conference when this is all said and done, and they end up playing Oklahoma. It'll probably be for the conference. I don't think Baylor's going to be a team, and I'll talk about that later in my segment when I give my best bet out for you guys. But, I think West Virginia is really good, so to see it go to 3.5, not surprising at all against an Oklahoma State team that's probably just middle of the pack as far as the Big 12 goes. I'm not going to be playing Oklahoma State just because it's a 3.5 now. So I don't necessarily disagree with that move.
I just always get surprised with West Virginia. I mean, they're a relative newcomer to the Big 12. They've been around for a little while there, but you know, these are all interesting travel spots for them. Going from Morgantown, we all know about the hardships it takes to get to Morgantown, so they have a really good home field advantage there. But going out to Stillwater here, you know, maybe it's the 11 o'clock local time kick for Oklahoma State that's also driving this number a little bit, but it is always interesting to see, you know, road favorite money coming in to drive a number through early in the week, because we know that the tendency in a general sense from the sharper players that move lines is usually to go the underdog route. So is that something our listeners should be looking for here in terms of line moves early in the week?
One thing I've learned over the years, I don't think it is generally just underdogs. I think a lot of guys and a lot of guys that ultimately move lines or that matter, that are worthwhile, lay favorites all the time, whether it's road or home. So I think that's kind of a fallacy in and of itself, that it's just underdogs. You saw West Virginia get steamed last week against TCU, and I had that number a little bit lower. And you know, I think it went from like 3, 3.5 to 6, 6.5. So it's just a team I think that people are buying on. And, you know, until they don't cover a game or until the market adjusts significantly, you know, sharper guys are going to keep firing on them. And so for people that got in on the West Virginia train earlier, we bet them against Texas Tech. I didn't bet them against TCU, but, you know, they've now won a couple in a row. And, if they cover this one too, it's going to be a team to reckon with. And for guys that have been kind of following West Virginia now for a few weeks, they'll, you know, be up, you know, net 3 units or 4 or 5, depending on when they finally lose. So I think the dog favorite thing, road, home, doesn't ultimately matter. If they like a team and they think the number's short, they're going to bet it.
We got a team that nobody liked last week, and that's Marshall. They took on Charlotte, lost the game outright, and that was a spot. I mean, endless Charlotte money came in on that game. That's one of the biggest line moves I've ever seen here, particularly at this point of the college football season. Sometimes you'll get a total that moves that much, maybe early in the year, but a side in week 8, that just doesn't really happen. But nobody interested in backing Marshall here this week. That number flew right through 14, sitting about 15.5, 16 right now. But Southern Miss has been a massive disappointment this season as well.
Yeah, they have, which is surprising. This is another one of those Sunday openers. If you were following, you actually got minus 10, which is nuts, because Marshall was laying, you know, 7.5 at home to Charlotte, and then Southern Miss is only laying 10 to Marshall. I thought that was a horrible number. I think it's a good bet all the way to 14, honestly. So for people that were able to get the early bet on Southern Miss, I think you have a winner. But Southern Miss, like you said, they've looked poor. I don't think it's as real as the Marshall play has been recently. I know Southern Miss lost to Troy, and they're supposed to win that game. But Troy's been a pretty good football team, if I recall. I mean, they took Clemson to the wire. That's, I think, their only loss. So I think they're 6-1. They might have one more loss. I could be wrong, but I believe they beat South Alabama last week. So I'm pretty sure they're 6-1. So, I mean, Troy's turned out to be a very, very solid football team. And Southern Miss, I think, will have a nice bounce back. They're lost to LSU. Of course, you're probably going to lose on the road to LSU. I'm not really worried about that for them. So I actually kind of like this spot for Southern Miss to take advantage of a really poor Marshall team that can't get anything going right now and just kind of blow them out. And I'm curious of the total. I know these are two bottom nine defenses. And, you know, Southern Miss is top 15 in, you know, pace. Marshall's around 40th. The total came down from 65 open to like 64.5. I'm going to be looking maybe at playing over in this game. So that's kind of my one lead now that the number's past the 14 to take in this one.
Three more games I want to look at here, and then I want to pick your brain a little bit on early season NBA, get some of your thoughts for that. Of course, after we get to the free pick here for our listeners. Boise State and Wyoming. We've seen some Boise State money here in this one. Wyoming, Craig Bohl's having a great season with this team. They knocked off Air Force at home. That was a huge win for them. Could have had a lead last week against Nevada out in Reno. They didn't. Found a way to win that game in a tough spot because it was kind of a sandwich game with this big win against Boise coming up. Is this a spot where Wyoming comes back to earth, which is, I think, what people are kind of expecting here in terms of this line movement? Because Boise is the class of the Mountain West.
Sure. I mean, that's an example of the last week bad spot, road favorite against the Nevada team that you'd think maybe is on par with Wyoming, as bad as they've been. But in recent years, you know, Nevada's been better than Wyoming has. Wyoming got steamed all the way through like 4, 5, 6, and 7 to 8, I think, by the time that kicked off. So, bettors like Wyoming, at least liked them last week. And so to see the money kind of come in on Boise this week, I'm not sure how certain that – how true I should say that move is. Is it still 13.5 and 14? I don't know if it's gone any higher. But I mean, when it was 12.5, I moved to 13 or 13.5, 14. I'm not sure how significant it really is yet. So I'll be watching it, keeping my eye on it. I had the number right at 13.5. So I think maybe it's just kind of a correction to, you know, a point or so from where it opened off, but I don't think it's really necessarily Boise is going to crush type move, unless this got up to, you know, the 17 range and it moved like 3 or 4 points.
See, what's interesting about that with you saying that your line is effectively where it is, I know that you talk about Wyoming's home field advantage as being a 5-point home field advantage for you. So does it surprise you that, you know, at least according to where this number is, that these teams are power rated pretty much exactly where you have them?
Because I've talked about how Wyoming's home field in general, I thought, was maybe the one home field in all the entire country that's not valued correctly in the market, and that was before the season at least, and you've seen it in recent years. And why that, I think that part of the reason that is the case is they've been so bad in recent years, but decent at home. Now that they're actually pretty good in winning games road or home, I think it's kind of balanced now itself out. So in this case, yeah, even though I give them 5 points for home field and the number's right on, I think that's either partly the market's just, you know, kind of, caught on to the whole Wyoming home advantage, or it could be that the market still loves Boise more than I do, which certainly could be the case because they've been bet on quite a bit in multiple spots throughout the year where my number was short of the closing number. So it could partly be that, you know, my home field, I'm giving Wyoming 5 and others are only doing 3 or 4, but they have Boise rated, you know, 1 or 2 points better than I do. And so that could just be a culmination of both.
A couple of big primetime games here, Auburn and Ole Miss. The first one I want to touch on, Ole Miss actually opened a short favorite at BetOnline when their numbers came out on Sunday of 1.5. Auburn now a 4.5-point favorite. That's a significant move.
Yeah, absolutely. And Auburn was is another one people were wondering, how are they laying 10.5, 11 points to Arkansas? And they just absolutely romped them. And they run the ball so well, Auburn does, and that's what their MO is. And Arkansas defends the run just about as poor as anybody in the country. And so that matchup was really bad. Ole Miss, they're much better defensively. They're also a lot better on offense themselves. I think it ultimately just comes down to if you think Ole Miss is trying anymore or not. And I know they were trying against LSU last week. They went up early, you know, in middle second quarter. They were still winning that game. So I don't think they're just giving up. But it's hard when a team that, you know, they're kind of fighting for an SEC West title at the beginning of the year. They played Alabama really, really close. They lose that, but they still at that point with one or two losses because they had lost to Florida State earlier in the season. They're okay. If your two losses are to two top 10 teams, basically, like, you know, you're going to be all right if you can win your other games. You'll get to a really good bowl game. Now they have, you know, I think it's four losses now, and it's tough to see them, you know, responding in the similar fashion that they would earlier in the year off of a loss. And so I guess I'm not surprised to see Auburn just get more money. Auburn's a team was one of my favorite season win overs that we played before the season from my college football preview. And so it's kind of nice to see people are finally on the Auburn train. But this number's gotten a little bit out of hand itself as well. I think Ole Miss should be slight favorites, and it's flipped the other way. And so, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make a play. I think maybe if you hit it now, it might come back down some with some numbers guys come in and try to correct this a little bit. But at the same time, you know, I kind of thought that Arkansas Auburn number was too high to begin with once it got to 10.5 and it didn't move through 10 back down, and it kind of went up to, I think, to 11 some places. So it'll be interesting to see where this one goes. I'll likely be staying away, but if I had to make a play, I still feel like Ole Miss is getting too much, you know, value here in a home spot in a matchup that kind of that perception of the Arkansas win for Auburn, I think, is getting a little overblown.
Well, perception was somewhere where I was going to go with this Auburn team is that, you know, you mentioned that you were very high on them coming into the season, so you know, you're probably not all that surprised by this, but a lot of people liked Auburn last year. We're kind of on the fence about Auburn this year, and that was coming after, you know, Gus Malzahn had the NCAA championship run, and you know, this was a team that everyone thought was going to take that next step in the SEC West and be this perennial powerhouse. They haven't really done it, but now all of a sudden, four games, they've looked good in all of them, three of them significant blowout wins. Is this a true, you know, statement, true position about this Auburn team for 2016, or is this kind of people going, well, they were good, so I'm not surprised that they're good again?
No, I think it is. I mean, the last two seasons, people forget, they were preseason top 10 in 2015 and 2014. They just failed to meet those expectations drastically. And that's one of the favorite things I like to, like, preach before the season and in my college football preview is these teams that get all the hype the year before, or in this case 2 years in a row before, and then they fail to meet expectations – They have a ton of value coming into that next season, typically. And we talked last year, two big examples were North Carolina and Iowa, who the year prior got a bunch of hype. North Carolina especially just fell on their face. They couldn't defend anyone, and I think they went 500. And then last year they were in the ACC title game, and they, you know, you could get them at 33-1 to win the conference and like 17-1 to win the division. And it was just these insane numbers because of one season, even though they have all the same talent that everyone loved, you know, 10 months before, now one season goes down and they're no longer good. The same thing with Auburn here. Yes, they had top 10 talent for 2 years. And then, you know, the years before that, they were in the national title game against Florida State. I don't know why people just decided to give up on Auburn. And here they are, you know, probably going to be a top 10 team again at some point this year, if they're not already. I honestly don't follow the media polls very much. So I'm not surprised at all to see them here. And, you know, I think it's a good, I guess, lesson to be learned from season to season. You know, don't give up on a team just because of one bad year, or in this case, it was two. And I think that's what offered a ton of value in some of those spots last season with North Carolina or Iowa, or in this case with Auburn this year.
One more game I want to touch on here for college football this week. It's kind of a big game. It sort of matters in the national landscape between Clemson and Florida State. This one, I mean, this is the premier game of the weekend. There's no doubt about that. Early in the over the summer at the Golden Nugget, Florida State was a 3.5 point favorite here in this spot. Clemson as high as a 5.5-point favorite. That is at one of the more public books in Bovada. But the Greek is showing 5 on this game. Are you surprised by what's happened so far with the action for this Clemson-Florida State line?
Yeah, my number, I think, was 2.5 or 3. And so to see it come up is a little bit surprising. But at the same time, it's not something I'm going to be looking to back Florida State at 5 just because it's moved up 2 points. I'd probably need to get at least a 6, maybe 7 before I look at backing the Seminoles. I think this is such a – just from a non-betting perspective, this game means so much for the college football playoff. You know, if Clemson wins, the rest of their schedule is cupcake. They're into the college football playoff, assuming they can beat, you know, North Carolina in the final or Virginia Tech in the final, which they'll be pretty significant favorites against too. But their 4 regular season games left are a breeze. You know, their toughest games against South Carolina, and that's nothing these days. So they'll be in. This is their, I guess, kind of first round to get into the playoff. And so it's so much, you know, on the play for them. They're coming off of a lucky win at home against NC State, where they were lucky that the NC State kicker missed a field goal at the buzzer, essentially, to win it. And they ended up winning in overtime, Clemson did. There's a lot coming off of a really bad showing. They want to get back into the playoff, and this game basically gets them in it. Florida State, on the other hand, I mean, they're also coming off of a bye, so both teams are coming off of byes. Jimbo Fisher gets to prep for 2 weeks, and it's a team kind of with nothing to lose. They already have a few losses, and you could totally see them just, you know, taking it to Clemson, you know, throwing in some trick plays and some wrinkles that Clemson hasn't seen yet because of the extra prep time that they had in taking this game. So if that happens, then watch out for, you know, one-loss teams that could run the table the rest of the way, like Louisville or Texas A&M, whose only losses are to really, really good competition. It opens up the door for them to maybe sneak into the playoff. And there's a lot that goes into this game, just from a college fan standpoint. And, you know, from a betting standpoint, it has moved, like you mentioned. But for me, I'm passing unless it's got the +7, which I don't expect it to.
Well, another one of those one-loss teams, if they run the table, Ohio State, a team that, you know, what, still the third or fourth favorite, something like that, for the national championship in terms of futures odds. So, you know, they could be a team that could also sneak in there as well. One other thing I'll ask you about this Clemson-Florida State game. Do you think that this number does close in that quote-unquote dead zone somewhere, 4.5, 5, 6, something like that? Or, you know, do you feel like it does actually go up to a number where people do buy back on the Seminoles?
To be honest, I think there'll be a little bit of buyback. I'd be surprised if it got to 6 or higher. But, you know, I've been wrong plenty of times in this type of stuff too. So I'll find out more this evening, to be honest. If you're curious yourself, you can shoot me a message. But I'll be able to find out if any groups are planning on hitting one side or the other. It feels like a matchup that I think most sharp guys are just going to stay away from because the number's pretty close to where it should be, you know, and there is just a lot of extra variables as far as the playoff goes. And so unless there's some information out there that they've been able to get a hold of that no one else has and they want to play one side, I just don't anticipate there being much, you know, and honestly, the Clemson money early in the week could be public. We don't really know yet. And so, yeah, my guess is if there is any type of movement, it's just a buyback on Florida State. And I should say real quick to your point about Ohio State, their loss to Penn State meant nothing. If they run the table anyways now, they're getting in for sure. They're going to beat Michigan at home and win the Big Ten. They're in with one loss. So that Michigan and Ohio State team or matchup, I should say, is ultimately a play-in game for the playoffs as well. So it's kind of fun having a couple of these throughout the regular season.
Yeah, and that was the thing, was everyone said, you know, the college football playoff's going to cheapen the regular season, or, you know, there were all the other stories that were out there. But, I mean, clearly that's not the case because you're going to get this game, and then as long as Ohio State doesn't trip up somewhere along the line, you know, then that game there on the Saturday after Thanksgiving is going to be an enormous one in Columbus. You teased it a little bit already, but your exclusive free pick for our Bang the Book Radio listeners this week is?
Yeah, it's Texas. I think they're +3.5 at most shops right now. If you have +3, like +100, I think that's a fine bet too. And it's against Baylor. And there's a few reasons why. My numbers project this right at pick, 50-50% winning percentage, you know, in a simulation on this game, and you're getting a +3.5 from the, you know, Texas on the home team. That actually played Baylor really, really well last year. If you remember, they were able to run the ball, just pound the ball against Baylor and grind, and they ultimately were able to to win that game. I know Baylor was down, I think, to like a third string quarterback in that one. But offensively, Texas did really well. And, you know, there's no reason I'm actually looking at that game as to why I would play this, but I'm just, you know, as far as the confidence goes for the Longhorns, they beat Baylor on the road last year. They can obviously do it at home. They know that. But this is more of a Baylor fade. It's a team that through six games, they're 6-0 and everyone thinks, oh, okay, it's Baylor. They're undefeated. They're, you know, they're as good as, you know, they have been in the past. I don't think so. They haven't really been tested yet by anyone very good. And the next six games will be the six toughest that they play this season. Their schedule's been that poor. They struggled against Iowa State on the road and probably should have lost. They struggled against Rice early. It was 0-0 in the middle of the second quarter. Rice is the worst defense in the country, literally. And by far, they give up 11.5 yards per play, which is basically 2 yards worse than the next worst defense. They struggled against SMU early. Now SMU beat Houston, so maybe that doesn't look as bad. But Oklahoma State was a game that they lucked into because of a bunch of turnovers going their way. And they were up by 5 late and ended up breaking a score. I think they won by – or I think they were up 4 late and they won by 11. But it's just it's a team that I don't think really is the Baylor of old. And we're going to find that out now. And I was talking to someone before this line ever came out with Texas. This was last week. And I said, you know, if you fade Baylor just blind the next six games, I think at worst you go 3-3 against the spread. But my bet is you go at least 4-2 or 5-1, maybe even 6-0. And, you know, it's at Texas. They play TCU, Kansas State, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Texas Tech on the road, both of those on the road at the end of the year. It's just a brutal six-game stretch, and I don't think this Baylor team is as good as the ones we've seen in the past. So I'm going to start, you know, the key to some of these, you know, we talked about West Virginia earlier and getting on them early. This one would be, you know, if you want to fade a team and you think you're right, get on it early. You know, we could hit 2, 3, 4 in a row here, fading Baylor on numbers that are probably a little too high. And, you know, you want to get in early versus wait until they're playing Oklahoma in 3 weeks and then play on Baylor and maybe they actually do cover that one. So jump in now. I think getting Texas at 3.5 just anyway is great value. But I'm going to be playing against Baylor most likely for the next little while, at least until the numbers adjust.
Would a Texas win here save Charlie Strong's job, or is Tom Herman signed, sealed, and delivered to Austin?
You know, that's so weird because how bad has Houston looked? It baffles me because Herman's been, like, so on point with Houston football. And now – and it's like that rumor started, and now Houston can't beat SMU. They struggled against – it's escaping me who they played the week before. They had to come back and barely win as super favorites. It feels like that might be signed and done, not because of what you're seeing from Texas, but because this Houston team just went from, you know, top 10 in the country, literally, to they're like a 500 team in conference in the AAC. It makes no sense to me. I like them this week, laying a really short number at home to UCF. You're supposed to play Houston, but who knows if they found out that he's already signed a deal to go to Texas next year. No wonder why the kids aren't playing for him. I think it's very, very, very strange. So you might be onto something with that, you know, a little conspiracy theory there.
Well, it certainly seems like something. I mean, Houston's got a ton of talent. They've had some injury problems, but, I mean, that's not a team that should fall off the way that it has. And that could very well – and that's another thing, too. I mean, this is the speculative time of the year. You're going to have coaches getting fired, coordinators replacing them. We got a situation like that with Fresno State tomorrow night where Tim DeReuter got fired. Going with an offensive coordinator as the interim head coach, you know, that's always an interesting dynamic. I guess before we switch over to the NBA, I might as well ask you about that. As coaches do get fired, you know, what do you look for out of these teams to see if you want to avoid them, if you want to play on them, if you want to fade them? Do you have any advice for that situation?
Yeah, I think generally playing on them is a good spot, and I don't know what the exact number is, you know, historically, lifetime on that. But two examples this year would be, and when this is the one I actually bet on, was when LSU fired Les Miles. And I played on them. I think it was against Missouri, actually. Like they were laying 13 or something in that range, and they crushed them. And that was one play on because Les Miles is pretty evident now for a couple of years. He was getting the least out of that team, which is literally, in my opinion, the second or third most talented team in the country just from a sheer talent, position by position, aspect in recruiting and everything LSU does. It's basically, you know, Alabama, Ohio State, and then LSU, and they just weren't being able to get it done. They fire him, and now they've covered a few in a row, and they look like, you know, this could be a good LSU team again. The other example is Purdue last week. They fired their coach, and they were getting 24 against Nebraska. And you saw them in the first half kind of – they actually opened the game with a pick six, which is standard Purdue football this year. They turn it over way, way too much and seemingly always for touchdowns the other way. And I kind of felt bad for people that played the plus 24, but then Purdue ended up, hanging in there. They used that energy, that fire to take it to Nebraska. They were winning outright at halftime despite giving them a seven-point head start. I think they were up 14-10. So Purdue was another one that covered if you took the 24 on the coach switch. And Fresno State's one, I think they're a little bit better than their record shows. And, you know, they've covered some bigger spreads against good teams like San Diego State. And I forget who it was last week, but in Air Force has lost three in a row as double-digit favorites outright. So this one's really weird, and I'm probably going to be looking at playing Fresno State. I'm not sure if it's 14 yet. I think it's 13.5 most places. But that's definitely one I do like. I think Fresno State's a little better than people anticipate anyways. Plus, you get the coach switch and an Air Force team that just can't put anything together. So I do like Fresno State here this week.
FIU is another team. Once they got rid of Ron Turner and went to Ron Cooper, they started playing a little bit better. They had the three straight-up wins in a row. Now, they weren't necessarily impressive wins, but given how things were before Ron Turner got fired, it's a pretty good turnaround for them. We'll flip over to the hardwood here real quickly, look at some early-season NBA type of stuff. Is this something that you dabble in quite a bit, or do you sort of let things kind of play themselves out a little bit?
No, I have to. I think there's just a ton of value in every league just about every league getting your bets in on certain teams or positions in early in the season. You know, if there's a particular team or two that you think are going to be undervalued going into the season, then you want to bet on them before that market adjusts, you know, a few weeks in. A prime example, this is just a really goofy one, but I'm telling you, until it adjusts, this is going to be free money. But yesterday, the James Harden prop for assists opened at 8.5. If anyone that follows anything knows, he's now the point guard of the team in a D'Antoni offense. He averaged 14 assists per game in the preseason per 36 minutes. He didn't play enough minutes to actually average 14, but he'll play about 36 minutes a game in real life. And he was averaging 14 assists a game. And that was in the preseason with a lot of, you know, changing of rosters and backups playing a ton of minutes with them. And I don't get how that was 8.5. Now it moved to 9.5. We also played rebounds and assists over 15.5. It got to like 16.5. Last night he had 9 assists by the end of the first quarter. It cashed before the first quarter ended. Now, part of it's the Lakers and the Lakers defense. But if this doesn't adjust, I'm going to be blindly betting Harden, you know, basically anything less than 11.5 assist overs until they finally adjust in, you know, a week or 2 weeks, whatever it is. But that might get us like a 5-1 or something. You know, just betting Harden assist overs because early in the year, because they hadn't really taken it into account. I mean the odds makers before the season started. So that's a small example of, you know, what I'm doing on a scale for every team, whether it's props or just, you know, a team in general that I like. An example might be the Sixers against Oklahoma City. Probably should have won the game outright. They ended up blowing it late, but they're a team that actually looked really strong. You know, they might be one that people play on early. The Timberwolves is another one. They moved from 2.5-point dogs to like 2.5-point favorites, and they went up 20-3 early and ended up losing that game too. But if you look at some of the early market moves, that, you know, anything that's 4 or 5 points like that, that'll be kind of indicative of, okay, this is where sharp guys think that this team is a lot better than, you know, basically the openers, which are lines from generally just they would have lined it at, you know, a year prior. So definitely a lot of value early. I think totals, I generally will wait a week or two to get a little more data in that regard. But for sides and, you know, teams that you want to just your opinion you think's right, I think attacking earlier is better.
I wish I would have known that you dug so deep into the NBA right away. I'd have dedicated some more time during this segment to that. What is your process? Are you a power ratings guy, you know, going off of what you expect, sort of putting some grades on these teams by position or whatever the case may be? Or are you just sort of looking to play on, you know, new coaches, teams that stay the same, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's everything. I do have a set of power ratings. It's not as NBA is so much different than even football in the sense, you know, as far as power ratings go. It's a good base, but there's so many when ultimately it comes down to it, you know, probably not in week one, but as the season goes along, there's so many guys that are getting rested, you know, an hour before a game or you know, the night before that LeBron or whoever it might end up being is going to be probably, resting on a back-to-back. You know, the Spurs do it a lot. So you need to actually be able to, and this would be harder to do for me for football, but I do it for basketball, but you kind of need to be able to have an actual numerical value for every player in the NBA so that when, you know, LeBron sits and Richard Jefferson is starting for the Cavs, like you need to be able to value that difference immediately and then use that to value it into a line. And so when you have, a spread, a new one with Richard Jefferson in the starting lineup instead, you can decide if that's a good number or not. And it's similar with totals as well. Although a lot of that is scheme and coaching, like you mentioned, and, you know, pace of play, like Mike D'Antoni, Houston, like that one flew over the total against the Lakers last night, and it opened 220 and closed 224.5 or 225. So that's another one, you know, Rockets overs blind early might end up being, you know, good until that adjusts a little bit. But, you know, as far as sides go, I really learned in recent years that each player brings something significant to the game on both sides of the ball and with or without the ball. And it's very advanced like metric stuff, but I try to assign a value to every player literally, and rookies are hard to do. And I try to stay away from teams that maybe play a lot of rookies and stuff. The Sixers last night, who was playing Embiid and Saric, and, you know, Ben Simmons is out, but that was an example of a team that I kind of wanted to play at +9.5 and I couldn't do it. I just wanted to kind of get some more data from some of the younger guys. But ultimately, once you have that data and you can value every player, then you can determine when you know what the starting lineup is going to be, you know, what the line should be.
Well, we'll definitely make sure that we get some more NBA stuff here on some of our future segments, because it sounds like a market that you feel like you can exploit, particularly, excuse me, early in the year. But Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com, what's going on over there at the website right now?
Yeah, just the usual, no big plays or anything crazy this weekend. Just my usual stuff for college football and NFL. I think we have like 7 college football plays up and then 2 NFL, and you have an NBA game going tonight. So I think you get like the weekend, Thursday through Monday pass deal that they do for a pretty reasonable price. We'll get you plays for everything Thursday through Monday. So that's what I'd recommend if you're interested.
And at Sports Cheetah on Twitter. Cheetah, appreciate your time as always, man. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again next week.
No problem. Take it easy.
Well, a good segment there. And like I said, if I had known that he was more into the NBA, I'd have dug a little bit deeper into that with him. But that's definitely something that I'll look to do here in our future Thursday segments with Cheetah. And, of course, if you want to hear more from Brian Leonard, and I don't know why you wouldn't, he's going back to that regular Tuesday time slot there, that 11:30 live recording time. But, of course, you can always get the shows and the segments over at bangthebook.com. You can also follow our Spreaker page where we post the individual segments. But no shortage of ways to get our Bang the Book radio content. As I said earlier in the show, coming up on Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 8, myself and Cole Ryan coming off of a 3-2 week that should have been a 4-1, quite possibly could have been a 5-0 as well. But you know, we're starting to see them better here. We had some good reads and some bad luck a couple weeks ago. So we are seeing these games better, so make sure that you tune in for that. And then also the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Got a couple of listener questions to throw his way. Then he'll also tell us where the sharp money is in both the NFL and the college football betting markets. So that should be a whole lot of fun. So that'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.